This is the Living Homegrown Podcast, episode number 26.
Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast, where it's all about how to live farm fresh without the farm. To help guide the way to a more flavorful and sustainable lifestyle is your host, national PBS TV producer and canning expert, Teresa Lowe.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lowe, and this is the podcast where we talk about living farm fresh without the farm. And that's through artisan food crafts like canning, preserving, and fermenting, small space food growing, backyard critter keeping, everything from chickens to goats, and just living a more sustainable lifestyle. If you want to learn more about any of these topics or my online canning courses, just visit my website, livinghomegrown.com. Before I dive into this week's topic, I just want to welcome all of the new listeners I have who are just joining me for the first time. Apparently, one of my podcasts, number two, became very popular and had a lot of sharing this past week. That's the one where I talk about using a special heirloom yogurt culture so that you can make yogurt on your countertop without any special equipment. And it was shared a lot recently, which is great. So a lot of you just signed up for my newsletter and you're new listeners because of that. And so welcome to all of you. I'm really excited to have you. On this week's podcast, I'm interviewing a really good friend of mine, Erica Strauss. She's a blogger at her website, Northwest Edible Life, where she writes about homesteading and gardening, and she also shares a lot of really great recipes. And that's because she's a professionally trained chef, and she has a fun, punchy perspective on garden-to-table eating and living. Erica and I met many years ago, and we really hit it off because we both live very similar lifestyles, and we both teach and share with other people how to do what we do. So we instantly had a lot to talk about. She has a great garden with chickens and ducks that she keeps with her family of four just outside of Seattle, Washington. And she's been featured in Best Food Writing 2013 and regularly writes for National Cooking and Gardening magazines. I featured Erica on an episode we filmed for our PBS TV show, and I will be sure to link to that in the show notes for this podcast. After all of our PBS episodes air nationally on most PBS stations, we post them so that people can watch the replays in their entirety in high definition. So I will be sure to link to that in the show notes, and then you can see her garden and everything. If you're a regular listener, you know that all of my podcast episodes have show notes with any of the links mentioned within the show, plus a full transcript of the episode. So for this one, you would go to livinghomegrown.com/26, and I will be sure to give that link again at the end of the show. Now, one of the reasons that I wanted to have Erica on today's podcast is because she has a brand new book coming out this week, actually, and the book is called The Hands-On Home, A Seasonal Guide to Cooking, Preserving, and Natural Homekeeping. It's got wonderful recipes and DIY projects, everything from household cleaners that you make yourself to even personal care products like lip balm and things like that. But what I'm going to have Erica talk to us about today is more what she covers in the book that is in relation to food. Most of you listen to my podcast either because you are growing your own food or you're interested in locally sourced food. And you listen to this podcast to learn all about capturing seasonal flavors and also preserving those flavors for later. Well, I want Erica to come on and discuss using up all of that food that we work so hard to get and make sure that nothing goes to waste. She's got some great tips in the book that she learned from being a professional chef, and I think you will like her suggestions for keeping a more productive kitchen. Also, you will definitely want to wait until the end because I'm going to do a giveaway of a copy of her new book, The Hands-On Home. I'll give you all the details at the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that. So without further ado, let me share with you my interview with Erica Strauss of Northwest Edible Life. Erica, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, Teresa, thanks so much for having me.
Sure. You know, we've been friends for several years, and before that we were virtual friends. That always sounds so weird, but we were virtual friends first before we became friends in real life, as they say. Mm-hmm. And that's probably because we live very similar lifestyles. So before we dive into your book, which I'm dying to talk about, I would love for you to describe for everyone how you live. What's your lifestyle?
Sure. Well, like you, I consider myself an urban homesteader. So I live in a suburban town just north of Seattle, and I have limited space. But on that limited acreage, I try and do as much as I can kind of with a DIY mentality for myself and my family with stuff I can grow and raise and make. So it's, you know, very people who listen to your podcast, they know what your lifestyle is all about. And mine is very similar. It's just, you know, a little bit up the coast in Seattle instead of down in LA.
Exactly. Well, how did you come to get into this lifestyle?
Well, you know, years and years ago, I was a professional chef. And when I had my first child, I really realized that the world of professional restaurant cooking was not very compatible with being a mom to young children for me. And so I transitioned from restaurant cooking to very intimate and small scale catering events. And I did a lot of cooking for families in the Seattle area who didn't have time to cook their own food. And what I really kind of learned in that is that the very best quality organic local ingredients are quite expensive when you're looking at it from a business perspective. And so I had this idea that I would start a garden and I would be able to grow my own beyond organic local fresh produce and have the very best flavor and quality for my family and my clients, and then also save money. Mm-hmm. Now, as it turns out, I didn't actually save any money because the startup costs in the garden were sufficient that I probably should have just gone back to the farmer's market. But when I transitioned into that sort of grow your own philosophy, I was totally hooked. And that was, I guess, over a decade ago now. And I've been expanding my garden and expanding kind of my urban homestead at every opportunity since.
Well, I've been to your homestead and I've tasted your cooking and it's fantastic. You have
You have
totally meshed that all together, and that's why we featured you on the episode of Growing a Greener World, was because you've done a fabulous job of incorporating your family life into your homesteading life. And I'm assuming that that may have been why you wanted to write this book, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. So tell me, what was your goal? What was your purpose in making this book, The Hands-On Home?
Well, my first vision of, as listeners know, I'm a blogger. And in blogging, what you can do is you can sort of put out piecemeal chunks of things. Mm-hmm. You can put out bite-size information about your lifestyle or what you've learned or how to do things. And I find that extremely rewarding. There's a community aspect to blogging that I find extremely powerful and I love. But it's not a really good format for putting out your whole philosophy or vision in one, you know, sort of meta explanation. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yes.
So my vision originally when I started playing around with the idea of writing a book was to actually have two books. And I was going to call one Inside the Productive Home and the second Outside the Productive Home. And it was going to be about the sort of ways that we can make more productive urban homesteading type lifestyles work in a modern context. And so the book that I had in my mind, Inside the Productive Home, has, through a various twists and turns, become The Hands-On Home. So what I'm really, really passionate about is trying to help people figure out how to just do a little bit more for themselves in whatever capacity appeals to them. I mean, the reality is not everyone is going to be able to grow their own vegetables or even want to. Not everyone is going to want to keep chickens. But everyone can find some area of these traditional skills that appeals to them and it allows them to just have that slightly more productive lifestyle. So that's what The Hands-On Home is really about. It's about focusing on that productive lifestyle and figuring out the parts and pieces that people can do for themselves.
Well, Erica, that's exactly what I love so much about your book is that you cover a lot of different areas. You're covering not only recipes and canning and DIY home products, but you also have the whole philosophy of instead of buying it, let's try to make it. And I think that philosophy is really resonating with a lot of people today. So you hit it dead on, and that's why I love your book so much.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, the sort of philosophy of do it yourself, I think has really blown up in popularity for very good reason. I'm really happy to see so many people in whatever way strikes their fancy, you know, embark on a more DIY lifestyle.
Yes. And the one area that I really wanted to dive into with your book was in the section on simple cooking, because you talk about tying together tips and tricks that you borrowed from not only your professional chef background, but also what old school farm grandmas know. And you had these 10 tips in your book, and we don't have time to cover all 10, but I would love to dive into a couple of them. One of the ones that really hit home when I was reading through, it was one of the first ones that grabbed me, was your tip, waste not, get fired not.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that one.
So yeah, this section of tips is professional chef tips that I have learned that I feel like translate really well for the hands-on home cook. And waste not, get fired not alludes to the fact that in a restaurant, the profit margins are very thin. And so anyone who has worked in a professional restaurant setting knows that you just don't waste food, because it's not just a moral issue of food waste. It's a financial issue. Mm-hmm. And you can literally throw away your profit margin in the little bits and scraps of things that people might not think about. That's the difference between a profitable restaurant and one of many restaurants that go out of business within the first year of opening, is you care about the details and you care about the food waste and those little bits and pieces. That makes a difference. And many people don't realize that under their own roof, in their own home, they're probably wasting thousands of dollars of food every year. And, you know, times are not maybe as tough as they were in 2008 for many people, but a lot of people are still struggling financially and economically, and to think about throwing away thousands of dollars worth of food, where could that thousands of dollars go that would make your life better? You know, could it go to pay off debt, to college savings, to buying yourself a great vacation somewhere, you know, wherever? It's like, wherever it goes, it's probably better than throwing food in the trash can, right?
Yes. And you had a fact in there about the average American family throws out $2,000 worth of food per year. That's like the average.
That's the average. Yeah. So it's $500 per person per year on average. And that's not, you know, the food waste that we see from agriculture. That's people buy this food and then don't eat it and then throw it away.
Right. So one of the other tips you had, where you go into ingredients do double or triple duty, mm-hmm. You talk very specifically about using all the parts. It's kind of, like nose to tail for everything, vegetables and everything else. And you had a great tomato story. Can you tell the tomato story?
Sure. Well, you know, the first restaurant, I don't even know if it's fair to call it a restaurant, the first place that served food I ever worked was this really divey little pub. And my first professional food job, basically. And this place was not high cuisine. You know, it was burgers and sandwiches and that kind of stuff. But one of the things that we did was we had all of these beefsteak tomatoes that we were slicing for burgers and whatnot. And we would take the center part of the tomato that was kind of uniformly wide and would make nice slices. And we'd get maybe 4 or 5 good tomato slices out of that tomato. But then there would be the blossom end and the stem end of the tomato that were just sort of hanging out. And then those parts got diced for diced tomatoes that we put on salads, or that we, you know, mixed up to make like bruschetta or something like that. So at no point, like, I remember one coworker of mine tried to throw away the end bits of the tomato and got thoroughly chastised, because again, for a restaurant that has very limited profit margins, you know, that's your profit right there. The little things that you might consider food waste, that's profit for a restaurant, and that's savings for a, you know, normal American family.
Yes, and you even talked about when you are doing any kind of cooking, all those little trimmings and scraps can be used for other things. And one of the tips, I had kind of one of those aha moments when I was reading it, you had about fresh peels or fresh fruit peels and how you use those trimmings to put into your homemade vinegar. Mm-hmm. And I just did a podcast episode a couple episodes back on making homemade vinegar. Now, I compost, so when I have peelings, it either goes to my chickens and then goes into the compost, or things go directly into the compost. But when I read that, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, there's all the peach skins and things like that could go into vinegar and make some of the most incredible flavors. I'd never thought of that. I always just thought of giving it to the chickens, which is, you know, still a good thing. But I thought that was a great tip.
Well, thanks. You know, and it's really true. You can take your peach skins, your pear skins, that kind of stuff, and you can ferment them to make your own homemade vinegar. And another thing that I've learned recently, it's not in the book, but I'd love to share it with your listeners, is that kind of stuff is really great if you cook it down with some applesauce or something like that and puree it so it's really smooth. You can then dry that to make fruit leathers.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, and you know, it's really amazing because if you use applesauce, which is, I think everyone knows how to make applesauce, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
If you use applesauce as your base, your fruit leathers tend to stay really nice and malleable, so they roll up really well. But the flavoring of what you put in there comes through. So if you make like a peach apple fruit leather, it really does taste like peaches, especially if you add maybe like a little bit of cinnamon to bring that flavor out. So that's another thing. I mean, there's so many ways that we can take these things that we think of as waste or compost and use them. Now, that said, if you don't want to, feeding them to your chickens is still a great way to get sort of a second life out of those things because you get the eggs.
Yes. And with the chickens, you're totally not wasting it. And then all of those nutrients go through the chickens, through your compost and back into the garden. But what I love about that fruit leather idea is that you know exactly what's in it. It doesn't have all the junk that you have in the fruit leather that you would get at the grocery store.
Oh, it's really true. I mean, especially as a mom, for me, the confidence of knowing what I'm feeding my kids is a huge advantage to this lifestyle.
Well, another thing you talk about when you're talking about being thrifty, which by the way, I think, you know, I say thrifty, but for me, it's really about being more sustainable in our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you're talking about. But one of the other things that you had, one of your other tips was, and I thought this was really cute, those are not leftovers, they're prep.
You know, I was chatting with a friend of mine years ago, and she was complaining to me that her husband refuses to eat leftovers. And I was aghast about this because to me, I mean, almost everything is leftovers. You know, if you go to a restaurant, if you go to a buffet, if you go to someone's wedding that's catered, the chances that you're eating essentially food that's been cooked and then reheated or something like that, that's very high. No restaurant, no professional restaurant makes everything from scratch to order all the time. You know, I remember when I was cooking at this one restaurant, we had risotto on the menu. And risotto takes a very long time to make properly from scratch. And so we would make it up to the point where the rice was just starting to get tender. And then we would chill the risotto in big sheet pans and portion it out. And then when a customer ordered the risotto, we would just take the portion from the sheet pan and finish it right to order.
Right.
And now this risotto was delicious, and there was absolutely nothing inferior about it because we did some prep work. But a lot of times people, they kind of get the wrong idea about leftovers. They think that eating leftovers means eating the same food 4 days in a row or something.
Like, which would be so boring.
Right. Oh, meatloaf again.
Yeah, right.
But I want to encourage people to think about getting some prep work done in their kitchen so that it's easier to put real food on the table in a hurry in our, you know, in the lifestyle that we have, which for many people is very busy. And leftovers play a huge role in that. So, you know, learning to utilize the components of your kitchen as prep instead of thinking them as like, oh, leftovers.
I think that's brilliant. And a lot of people don't think that way. They think when they have to cook dinner, they're starting from scratch every time. And with just a little bit of planning, you can really have several meals from just one thing. You even talk about, you know, with the chicken, after you've picked off all the meat, then you can make broth and then you can make a soup. You know, it all ties together.
And the amazing thing is when you kind of get into this way of cooking, what happens is that you, like everyone, you know, I have situations where I have no idea what's for dinner. I try to menu plan and do that. But come on, I mean, this is real life. And so there are plenty of times when my kids come home from school and I'm looking around going, oh, they're hungry. What do I do? But if I open up my refrigerator and what I see is I have some already cooked pasta, for example, and I have some maybe leftover chicken from a roasted chicken over the weekend, and maybe I have a little bit of local cream, you know, on the top shelf or whatever. Very quickly, I can throw together these, quote, leftovers into something that's new and fresh and my family's going to like, and it saves so much time. You know, I don't cook from scratch in the sense of starting at the very beginning of a recipe. Very often, I use what's in my refrigerator and my freezer to just create something that's going to please my family and be sustainable and be easy on me.
You know, I think a lot of people might think, well, that's easy for you because you're a professionally trained chef. And that's, you talk about that actually in your book, that you just have to learn some of the basic skills. And then as you do each recipe, you get a little bit better. I think you had some kind of a quote, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was something like, the first time you do the recipe, you get it. And the second time you've mastered it.
Oh, yeah. I think I say something about that when I talk about yogurt.
Yogurt, yes.
But that's true for many things. You know, it's interesting because I've written what is in many ways a cookbook. I talk about things other than food in the hands-on home, but it is a cookbook with recipes. But, and I'll happily admit this, I don't really like recipes. And so I found myself when I was writing the book very torn, because you have to provide, there's a format for recipes. It's mm-hmm. It's an agreed upon universal format, and you really have to provide instruction in that format. But as a cook, as a home cook, I look at recipes more as inspiration and guideline than as some hard and fast rule.
And well, you even have, that's one of your tips. You talk about the Pirates of the Caribbean. Can you say that?
Yeah. Your recipes be more like guidelines.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yes.
And people who are comfortable cooking all treat cooking like this. Baking's a little bit of a different thing because there's more of a science to it. But people who are comfortable in the kitchen and comfortable cooking, almost all of us, you know, we're like improvisational in our cooking. We mm-hmm. adjust and we move to it. And what you find when you get a little bit of practice in that is that there aren't really that many recipes in the world. It's very easy to get overwhelmed with blogs and cookbooks and magazines that all put, you know, there's probably, I don't know, 500 million recipes or something that you could go and find. But when you really look at them, there's only a few major techniques that are represented by those recipes. And once you really figure out the technique, once you figure out how to sear a piece of meat and then finish it in the oven, or once you figure out how to braise something, or once you figure out how to high heat roast vegetables, or once you figure out how to cook a grain, once you've done this to one thing, you can really apply that technique skill to almost everything. So I'm very torn because on the one hand, I had to provide recipes. And on the other hand, what I want to tell people is, you know, go learn techniques and think about recipes as a way to get more experience with techniques that you can then apply to other things. And really, that's the key to being a confident, flexible home cook.
And it's even that way in canning, in that you have to follow the basic canning of so that you have your right acidity, but you can totally adjust the seasonings and make it your own.
And absolutely.
Yeah. And so a lot of people are afraid to do that, but you know, the cinnamon is not what is making that jam safe. It's what's adding your own little spin on it. And I loved that line about the Pirates of the Caribbean. I actually laughed out loud at that. You know, since I know you, I could actually picture you saying that. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I hope that, you know, some of my own personality and whatnot came through in the book. What I really wanted to avoid was the sense that I was, like, could make people feel guilty. I have this sort of constant awareness that many people feel like they're not doing enough. Many people feel like they're not good enough. And people like me who write lifestyle blogs can contribute to that. And one of the things that I really tried to do with this book was, you know, keep it real for people. Acknowledge that we're all working within time constraints, within money constraints, within, you know, different sets of values. And so, you know, I tried to provide a lot of ways that people could get more hands-on and do more DIY lifestyle stuff, but without the judgment. So I hope I succeeded in that.
Well, I thought it came through. Your personality definitely came through, but I thought definitely you did not intimidate. What you do is empower. And I think that was really the key. And that definitely came through for me as I was reading it. So I think you nailed it.
Oh, Teresa, thank you. I want to give you a big hug.
Well, I was excited about your book coming out because I got to have the privilege of having a little bit of a sneak peek since I was one of your proofreaders when you were at the end and you were all comatose. I know it was scary at the end. I'm sure you're just like, get it done. But I was really lucky enough to get that sneak peek. And one of the themes that you carry throughout the book is the idea of finding a balance between doing the DIY versus, you know, buying something. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the thing that so many of us struggle with is that there aren't enough hours in the day. And, you know, the philosophy of DIY is wonderful, but it can go so far that you run out of hours. It's all about figuring out where the line is for you between what you can do for yourself and what doesn't make sense. And there's going to be situations where it doesn't make sense to make your own lotions. I'd argue that there's probably never a situation where it makes sense to go buy a bunch of cleaners from the drugstore when they're so easy to make yourself at home with common ingredients. But, you know, I really feel like people need to look at their own life and their own time, their own money, and they need to figure out what that line is for them. Like I mentioned this in the book, I would love to be able to say that I don't use any plastic in my kitchen. It's something I've tried, I've challenged myself like that, but that's just not true. I use a lot of plastic wrap, you know, to kind of like seal in freshness and stuff that I'm freezing or stuff that I'm making for my kids or to cover leftovers. Of course, I have the mason jars and the glass Tupperware type things, but plastic wrap just still has this place in my kitchen and I haven't been able to get rid of it. Now, I have in the past felt some guilt about that, right? I have felt some, you know, ecological guilt about the fact that I still use plastic wrap. But, and I'll be really honest with your listeners here, I've just had to get over it. I have to look at my life and go, all right, I'm doing the best I can with what I have, with the time I have available, with the skills I have now. And maybe in the future, things will change and I'll be able to get rid of all that plastic wrap. But for now, if it's a tool that allows me to do more for myself in these other areas, I'm going to just be okay with it. And so it's, again, it's this fine balance in a DIY lifestyle between being empowered and feeling guilty. And so I want people to go, you know, empowered. I don't want people to feel guilty.
It's about not being so hard on yourself. Yeah, I like that. And you have to, like you said, you have to justify the different things that we do to balance the other things that you want to do. And you have to give yourself permission.
Absolutely. I do think that we have to acknowledge that everyone is coming at this DIY lifestyle from their own circumstances. And they, you know, they just need to sort of figure out where they're going to get the most bang for their buck.
Excellent advice. Okay, I have one final question.
Okay.
So before you started on this journey of a more productive DIY lifestyle, you were just getting started. And now that you're older and wiser, I would like you to go back in time. If you could do that, what advice would you give to yourself now given all your knowledge?
Wow. The advice I would give to my younger self: you will find in the course of this lifestyle that certain things draw your passion. I have found this in the garden, where certain years I've been really passionate about growing a whole bunch of different types of potatoes, and then other years I've been really into melons or what have you. And at home, where, you know, there have been times when I've been very passionate about soap making, and then there have been other times when I've been very passionate about, say, convenience foods that I can freeze, that kind of stuff. Whatever your passion is in the DIY lifestyle, throw yourself into it and enjoy it. And don't worry if you're not doing everything all at once. It's okay to explore these skills sequentially. And it's okay to decide like where your passion lies and just throw yourself into that. So that's what I would say for everyone is, you know, let your passion guide you. Let what you're really excited about learning guide you, and put away any idea of like guilt or not good enough if you're not doing everything all at once.
I think that's an excellent place to stop, because that's really good out the door waving as everybody goes goodbye advice. That's really good. Well, congratulations, Erica. I think your book is awesome.
Thank you so much, Teresa. And thank you so much for having me on the Living Homegrown podcast. As I do know, because we're friends, I listen to this podcast religiously and I just love it. I'm so happy that you're expressing yourself through podcasting these days.
Oh, thanks. Well, I know you're one of the listeners that know about the outtakes at the end. And I can guarantee everybody that there were some outtakes at the end of this one. So everyone should keep listening all the way past the ending music if they want to hear our outtakes from this episode.
But yeah. Everyone should listen to me embarrass myself.
But I did get her permission to include it at the end, so we're good.
Absolutely. No.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Erica, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks, Teresa.
Well, there you have it. That was my interview with Erica Strauss and her book, The Hands-On Home. So as always, if you are a regular listener, you know I have lots of great information in the show notes for every podcast episode. So I will have everything mentioned in this episode, including Erica's book and the episode where we filmed her for Growing a Greener World on PBS. But in addition, if you would like the chance to win a free copy of Erica's book, Hot Off the Presses, I purchased an extra copy to give away. All you have to do is go to the show notes and leave a comment. All the details are right there for how you can win. So to do that, just go to livinghomegrown.com/26. That's /26. And I will have all the information right there for you. And all you have to do is leave a comment and you might just win a copy of this book. So thank you very much for listening today. I know how busy you are, and I really appreciate that you took time out of your busy day to spend it listening to my podcast. So thanks for that. I will see you all next week. And in the meantime, keep working on those food choices that are local, seasonal, and homegrown. See you next time.
That's all for this episode of the Living Homegrown podcast. Visit livinghomegrown.com to download Teresa's free canning resource guide and find more tips on how to live farm fresh without the farm. Be sure to join Teresa Lowe next time on the Living Homegrown podcast.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. Whenever you're ready, girl.
All right. Let me take a sip of water.
Yeah, me too. I've been trying to clear my throat so I don't clear my throat while we're recording. Mm.
Well, if you have to, just stop, clear your throat. You know how to do it.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. All cleaned up.
I feel nasally cleansed.
We should have done this with cocktails. Okay. Absolutely. And it's so you're not, you're the. Let me try that again.
Hold on. I'm going to go get a cocktail.
Yeah.
I love your outtakes at the end of your show.
Oh, thanks. Not everybody knows they're there. Because a lot of times people just think, oh, it's the end. And they turn it off and think that the music goes to the end.
Uh-huh.
No, it's like only the people who really listen know about it. It's pretty funny.
I listen. I'm going to be listening to see if you put in my like snorting my...
I actually was going to, if you're okay with it. Okay, let me get back to what we're doing. All right. Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
All right.